How have you been? What are you up to? And we need to get up to speed on your hobby. Your name came up the other day. I guess, you know what? Here's where we start. You and I are supposed to be going to Seattle in like 22 days. That's not happening, is it?
I thought, you sure? I thought we were still going. There's no baseball game to see in Seattle in a couple weeks.
Well, there might be some kids at a park somewhere. I don't know if they're going to let us cross the line for that, though.
Yeah, no, unfortunately, I don't think we're going to be watching much baseball in a couple of weeks, at least in person. We'll maybe get a little bit on TV, but no, all's been good here on my end. Kind of a unique off season, I guess, as far as the hockey thing goes. We've been assuming that we'll go back to play in the fall, but you know, as optimistic as you make me out to sound, I do have a few reservations about hockey in Europe this fall, and just how it's all going to go, and it'll be interesting to see that ride. And I'm obviously hoping it comes back so I can keep the hockey thing going for a couple more years. But if it doesn't, so be it. So we'll see. I'm kind of waiting this thing out and seeing what happens.
Yeah, fair enough. Jeff Glass with us, former Chicago Blackhawk, played in Austria last season. Tell us about how you're filling the time this offseason, and maybe wind back the clock a little bit, because it's been what, 3-4 years of you with a nice little side project that looks like is lining up to be your second career?
Yeah, well, it was funny when you, well, I guess I'm going to get you up. I decided to become a pilot and take my hand-eye coordination to something else other than stopping hockey pucks whizzing by my forehead. So the long story short was when I came back from Russia, I was with the Toronto Marlies. And they left me home on a road trip. We had another goalie there, and they put us up in a real nice hotel downtown Toronto, right across the street from the Billy Bishop Hotel, and so or Billy Bishop Airport. And so I wandered over there one day and asked them what it would take to get up in one of the planes. And the guy was nice enough to take me up right on the spot. We buzzed around Toronto for a couple hours, and from that moment I was hooked. So I took it with me from Toronto to Rockford to Chicago. I actually finished my pilot's license down in San Diego when I was playing down there, and I wasn't sure it was just supposed to be a hobby, but it's turned into a little bit more than that now. And anybody out there that's trying to be a pilot probably can speak to this, that you get hooked, and it's become a little more than that. So I'm a few hours away from my commercial license, and I guess in the business they call it flying for hire. So if hockey doesn't go the way I want it to go in the fall, or if maybe I choose not to take that path, then, yeah, I'd love to get into the aviation business.
That's crazy. So if you're not left behind on a road trip when playing for the Marlies in the American Hockey League and you don't randomly go up to some stranger and start chatting them up, you might not be into this. This wasn't like a childhood thing. This was just a sort of your gut told you to go there that day.
Well, yeah, I've always loved planes and flying, but for some reason, it always felt like hockey was what you're supposed to do. I think as Canadians, as hockey players, it might be changing now. But when I was coming up, the focus was on hockey, and you wouldn't dare expand your horizons and you know, try to maybe take on a hobby or a passion as well as hockey at the same time. And to be honest, I hope this Lou Lamoriello scared the crap out of me at the time. So I didn't really tell much about anybody about what I was up to on the side. I kind of kept it quiet, but, no, it was always something I loved doing. And, like I said, I always thought it'd be kind of cool to just fly myself around when we're going out to, let's say golf on a Tuesday morning. You'd be able to fly there up in Edmonton rather than have to drive the car.
You got to get off the QE2. Anything you can do to get off that highway? Just too many accidents that stretch. Let's get up in the air.
Yeah, no,
15,000 to 20,000 feet.
It feels like the way to travel. So I obviously with the times the way they are right now with the pandemic, I don't know. Some people are calling me crazy for getting into aviation, but I'd like to think that the whole business and comes back. And who knows? Maybe we'll be talking a different tune here down the road.
Jeff Glass with us. So yeah, Lou Lamoriello was the GM in Toronto. How would he have reacted if you're like, "Oh, hey Lou, you know, it's me, Jeff Glass. Hey, sorry to interrupt. Just gonna do some flying stuff at the try to get become a pilot here while I'm playing." That how would that a conversation have gone?
Yeah, I don't even know if Lou knew my name at the time. So to be honest,
fair.
He probably would have. You know, getting into his office in the first place might have been a little bit of a chore, but if I did get into the office and Lou actually did have the time for me, I don't think the conversation would have went too well. I know my wife was asking what we were practicing and a few of the maneuvers safety maneuvers were obviously probably not what Lou wanted his, let's call it, fifth goalie in the organization to be practicing on his spare time. So, yeah, Lou never really found out about much about that, and I think we're all okay with that.
Okay, so tell us what you're up to. You said hopefully soon full commercial license. What are sort of the steps along the way? You need a ton of hours, and you mentioned, you know, what was that, 4 or 5 years ago that you started this journey? So how many hours do you need, and what are the different levels you got to get to, and maybe what makes it unique about flying near the mountains here, which I think everyone would be curious about?
Yeah, well, first off, it feels awesome to talk about something other than hockey here. For the first time me and you get together, first thing we do is we go on a sports run. So here's, I guess, an airplane run. But no, I've been doing, you get a private pilot's license, and you get to fly your buddies around. You can fly yourself, your family around, but you're not allowed to fly for hire. And that's supposed to take anywhere from 40 to 60 hours in the airplane. And that was the one I completed in San Diego. And since then, you need 200 officially and more like 250 hours to get a commercial license, and that allows you to fly for hire. And then from there, the next big step is an airline transport pilot's license, and that's 1500 hours. So that used to be the standard for WestJet, Air Canada, and those companies, and I'm definitely still a few hours away from there. So I'm sneaking up on my 250, which allow me to fly smaller airplanes and maybe less or a little bit more remote locations. And so I actually have my final exam up in Edmonton next week. I got to go up and do a written exam and then pass the actual exam here in Calgary a week after that. So sneaking up on it, but it's been a lot of fun. It's been, like you said, a lot of hours by myself twiddling thumbs in airplanes, but really, really enjoyed it.
You should get your name out there to the GMs around the league. Hey, if anyone needs an emergency backup in the Edmonton hub, I'm like a 40-minute flight away, max. Like, I'm there. Let's do this.
I think I could sell it a couple ways. I've always talked to my wife about this. I said, hey, here's the deal. Like, I could fly the charter, then I could be your, like, third or fourth or fifth goalie. And, hey, like, while we're at it, we might as well. I mean, I've done enough with goalie stuff. I could be the trainer. We could kind of, like, combine a few jobs here, a little bit of a melting pot, and keep me relevant in the National Hockey League.
We got to get you on air too. You should be doing the broadcast. You should be in the booth. I don't know how much rest you need before those cross country flights home at the end of the road trip. But I think you could do color before that flight.
No, I'll let you do the color. I will. I'll talk on the radio on the airplane, and yeah, we'll stick to this. But it's been a lot of fun. Like I said, it's something totally unique. When I tell most people that I've been flying in my spare time, they kind of laugh, but I really enjoy it. And like I said, it's kind of turning into the next phase here of my life, the next chapter. I always thought that I never wanted to be the guy that didn't know what he wanted to do when he was done hockey. And hockey seems to come to an end quicker than you know. And I know that's cliche, but when you're just cruising along, next thing you know, it's not. And so I like to think that I have something I can transition into.
Jeff Glass joining us here on Boomer in the Morning. Ryan Pinder alongside Jason DeForest and Will Nault.
I guess, Jeff, would you consider yourself a bit of an airplane nerd then? Like, could you, if you're walking down the street, you see one flying, you could identify which type of plane that is? Do you find yourself as have you been researching planes? Like, are you obsessed with planes, or you just kind of always wanted to try a fly?
No, I think, yeah, secretly, deep down, I'm definitely a nerd in more ways than one. And just ask a couple of my buddies about that, I guess. But my daughter here, I got her hooked on it. And it's something that's funny. It kind of takes over your life. It becomes a passion just like hockey. And I guess that's a little bit to do with my personality. Once I start something, I can't stop it until I finish it. So, yeah, when planes fly by, it's a big deal in our family. It's my daughter's pointing them out right away. And I'd be lying if I said I didn't probably have a very big influence on that. But it's been cool. I don't really enjoy too much about the history. I you need to know some of that stuff, obviously. But that doesn't get me as excited as talking about maybe the future of aviation, where it's going, and maybe what small role I could have in it. So that's kind of where I like taking the conversation, but it's been a lot of fun.
What else have you been up to in this pandemic? Have you been golfing lots? What's keeping you busy?
Yeah, no, I wish I was. I wish I could tell you that I'd been swinging the twigs a bunch, but I actually haven't. This flying thing takes over your life. So I've been cranking out the hours here at the Calgary Flying Club, doing a bunch of that. But no, a little bit of work, of golfing, a little bit of working out, trying to stay in shape, a little bit of coaching. I've been doing a little bit of coaching on the side, trying to, like I said, I love hockey, and by no means do I think this is the end, but so coaching the kids seems to be something fun that I enjoy doing as well. So a little bit of everything, and we moved into a new home build right at the beginning of the pandemic here, so just getting things organized in the house, and that seems to be the full day. I mean, having a two-year-old is a job on its own, so I guess just getting through the day with her and feeling like I'm alive at the end of the day feels like an accomplishment sometimes.
So we went on the plane run. We do want to ask you a couple of hockey things. So your thought on you know, having 12 teams in two different cities, 24 teams back. I know that it's not what we usually see in terms of the NHL playoffs, but what's your thought on how the NHL is trying to resume things amid the pandemic?
Yeah, I personally think it's awesome. And I'm always very careful on my take on this, because I think that a lot of the guys that are coming back to play are in different situations than myself, and I respect their opinions for that. And I think that can't be forgotten in all this, is they've been very fortunate to get put into the positions they are, and they've earned the right to their decision. And I think that shouldn't be forgotten here, that if they don't want to play for whatever reason, I think they've earned the right to, and they're the best players in the world for a reason. And I think for the best of the sport, I'm super appreciative that they've all decided to come back and have these two hub cities. And but I totally respect where they're coming from. Now, with that all being said, as much of an aviation nerd as I am, I'm more of a hockey nerd. I can't wait to have hockey back in a month and a bit here, and see it on TV and watch the best players play. And I think it's going to be very exciting. I really do. I think it might take a game or two for the guys to get ramped up and kind of get a feel playing in front of no fans. But don't kid yourself when the Stanley Cup's on the line or you embarrass yourself once or twice. These guys are so competitive that the hockey will get right back to what we know it.
Now, I got to ask you, because your NHL life was spent in Chicago, which we all know what the United Center is like. I don't know what it's like as a goalie as opposed to a forward or defenseman, and you know, listen to other people talk, but I certainly know as a goalie you like to focus on certain things and you like to be in that zone. You've been able to wrap your head around what those guys are going through to be able to play these games, you know, the most crucial games of the year in the playoffs with no fans? Like, that's got to be the most awkward part of all this, no?
Well, Will, you're asking, like, the man about playing in front of no fans. I've spent the majority of my career in the American Hockey League, so unfortunately, or fortunately, I know all about playing in front of nobody. And deep down inside, you can get yourself motivated. So I know these guys are used to playing in front of sold-out barns, especially, like, for example, Chicago. Those guys have some of the best fans in the world, but they also do training camps. And you know, there's no spectators at training camps, and those games mean something. And those guys will get the hang of it, but it's definitely different. I know the fans are a huge component to what goes on there. But like I said, you're dealing with the most competitive guys in the world. These guys are at that level because they know what it takes to get there and what it's going to take to win if they want to win. And somebody's going to want to win, I'll promise you that. And when they do, they'll be the ones that rise to the top, and it should be fun to watch.
Go back to one of the first things you talked about in the interview here with Ryan, and that's the fact that, you know, you don't know what the situation is in Europe. You've played a long time over there. You've got connections in a bunch of different leagues. What is the word overseas for maybe those that don't know in North America? Well, you hear all about the NHL and what they are trying to do to get back to playing. I don't think the business model lines up the same way in Europe. What have you been hearing, and what are you expecting right now, Jeff?
Yeah, and I can only speak to my personal situation. I know each league in Europe is handling it a little bit differently, so I don't want to speak for the other leagues. But in Austria, they were initially planning an October training camp and a November season to start. So they're a little bit obviously set back from their normal schedule. The thing you touched on, Will, real well there is that it's just not the NHL as far as the money that's earned, the fans that show up to the game, just the revenue that's generated. So the problem with European hockey is it's 100% a gate driven. European, Austrian hockey is a very large gate driven league. So when you have no fans at the games, I think they're having a real hard time trying to figure out how it's going to work. However, there is a TV contract in place, and they could be broadcasting the games at home so that the fans have them. But I just don't think it's going to get going as well as we think. Already one team's dropped out. I heard a second team's going to drop out. My gut tells me that what's going to happen is every league in Europe is going to lose a couple of the bottom end teams. And when I say bottom end, just the teams that were just scratching to get by in the best of times. And so you go from a 12-team league down to maybe an 8-team league, concentrate the players a little bit. The hockey will definitely go up, but until we get fans back, some of those teams just won't be able to survive.
I hate to get like all real, but you kind of mentioned it earlier about, you know, you're kind of bracing yourself for the fact that maybe this is the end. I mean, are you at peace with where things are at and all the things you've accomplished in your career? If it does ultimately come to an end, are you at peace with where things are at, Jeff?
Yeah, for sure. Like I said, hockey players are funny that way. I was always told when I was growing up and when I started to turn pro, hey, it's going to go fast. And when it does, be ready, like jump on and enjoy the ride. And been able to play 15 years pro and really, really enjoyed the ride. I think one of the things I'm most fortunate for was the chance I took on myself after playing 7 years in the KHL. I got into a pretty good groove over there, and things were good, and there was no real reason to change anything. But I still had a passion to try to play in the NHL, and I'm super thankful that I had a good support group around me, and the people and my close group of friends and family and agent supported the idea to come back and give the NHL a second try. And to have that experience with the Chicago Blackhawks was something obviously I'll never forget. So looking back, it was great. Now, with that all being said, I'm going to take that conversation and shove it, because I still think I can play, but you never know. This COVID might just shut me down. And if it does, I'll be happy with where I finished.
I was going to say, it's not bad too when you look back and say you played a game in the NHL in the Dome in front of your friends and family. That's pretty sweet too, right?
Yeah.
It would have been great if Gio didn't go bar down on me in overtime. But other than that, it was a great experience here in Calgary. And yeah, super thankful for it.
Jeff, a couple more from me. Let's put yourself in the shoes of a goalie coach. You're in the playing round. You're obviously going with your number one. But these round-robin teams, are they going to get both goalies work, do you think? Or is it just going to be, okay, just Rask? Or do you want some Halak, Bishop, and Hudobin? How does this work for teams? Would you want to get your backup a start? Do you care about seeding 1, 2, 3, or 4?
I think you do. I think 100% you get both goalies going. We all know how this goes, and speaking from a goalie that's always been a little bit more of a depth goalie in his term, I understand that it doesn't take much for your guy to go down, and all of a sudden your three's the backup, and then all of a sudden your two goes down and your three's the guy, and everyone's looking around going, what happened? How did this happen to us? And our whole season's out the window. So I think it's paramount that not only do you get two goalies going, but you get two goalies feeling comfortable about themselves, so that if an injury or if something happens where you have to go to your two, not only is he ready, but he's confident. So I always look back at some of the best goalie coaches I had, or even coaches that manage goalies. And it's not about getting your starter as many games as you can, about making him feel good. So the one thing that I would always take away is coaches love playing a starting goalie. And if he wins, he gets to keep playing. But I have actually adopted like the opposite mentality. If a goalie wins, you should actually give him some rest. Let him feel good about himself. Let him practice a few days, build his confidence, build his skills while he's feeling good, rather than the traditional, you lose a game and you're out. Now he comes to the rink the next day, not feeling good about himself, maybe in a sour mood, and the work ethic just isn't there, or maybe the buy-in to what the goalie coach is trying to sell isn't there. So why not win the first game or two, pull your starter, let the backup play a game or two. The games are going to be so condensed that he's not going to get stale, and then you got two guys rolling, and away you go.
Finally, being in the aviation business now, or soon to be officially in the aviation business, I'm sure you have some UFO stories for us on World UFO Day today. Can you tell us the truth is out there somewhere? What any unusual objects on the horizon, Jeff?
I got nothing for you. The closest thing I've seen to a UFO is your drive. Like off of the second tee, I've seen your ball go sideways in the air completely right into the bush. And that's about the closest thing I've seen to something from outer space. So, literally, I got nothing for you there. I wish I could contribute to that conversation.
That's a smooth landing, Jeff. Thank you, sir. We'll do it again soon.
Awesome. My pleasure. Good talking with you guys.
Jeff Glass.